since June, when we had left the Easter season and returned to the readings of ordinary time, we've been hearing in that second reading from Paul's letter to the Romans. We only hear for one more week, and quite frequently that second reading is like the poor cousin that gets forgotten. So maybe today we need to that second reading. And it's kind of an easy one to pay attention to today, because it appears to be very straightforward and very simple, doesn't it? The commandments: you shall not commit adultery, you shall not kill, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and whatever other commandment there may be are summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. In the midst of all the complexity of Paul's writing in Romans, this stands out, doesn't it? You shall love your neighbor as yourself. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. It sounds very simple, doesn't it? But I think we could all agree that it's not very simple at all to carry out the summary of the commandments. But we should not be downhearted, because the gospel tonight reminds us that this isn't just a problem that we have right now. This is a problem of trying to put this simple saying into action that's been around in the church since the very beginning. Before getting into the subject matter in Matthew, let's take a step back and remember what's going on in Matthew's gospel. Matthew's gospel, one way of looking at it, is structured into five books. Five books like the Pentateuch of the Old Testament, the five books of Matthew. And in each one of those books, there is a narrative section, the story of what Jesus is doing with his disciples, and then there is a discourse section. We are now in the fourth book of Matthew, and that book is all about formation of his disciples. In the narrative part, we saw them moving, getting closer to Judea. Remember, that's where we heard about Peter receiving the keys to the kingdom and then getting it all wrong last week. Now we move into the discourse. This is Jesus talking to the disciples about community, about how to deal with community, how to deal with Christian communities. It's Jesus talking to the disciples. It's Matthew talking to his various churches about how community should work. Love one another as you love yourself. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. It's all about the difficulties these communities were having in trying to put that into action. The piece that immediately precedes what we hear tonight is about those who get lost from the community. It's Matthew's version of the lost sheep. The sheep is lost, and the shepherd goes out to find the one of 100 that is lost. So Jesus is talking about what to do with the lost sheep, the one who seems unloved, who has run away. Then we come to what we hear today. It's not the one who has left the community that you want to bring back. This is the person that stays in the community and whose behavior is a problem to the community. So not the runaway, but this is the one who stays. What do you do when you have somebody like that and you're trying to live, you shall love your neighbor as yourself? What Jesus offers is kind of a step-by-step plan of fraternal correction or reconciliation. Step one, go and talk to him individually. And if you can work it out between the two of you, that's great. If that doesn't work, take two or three witnesses and go over the same thing. Both of these come from Old Testament and the Qumran community about how to deal with internal conflicts. And then if that doesn't work, take him to the church. Now the church, the ecclesia, would mean the local community. This does not mean send an email to the Vatican to report that person, okay? So take him to the church. And if he doesn't reconcile there, if things do not change, then what you're supposed to do is treat him like a Gentile or a tax collector, like a Gentile and a tax collector. This was kind of a stock phrase in Judaism for somebody who would be outside or on the fringes of the community. So this troublesome person who's staying in the community, if he doesn't respond to any of these things, you should treat him as an outsider. Place him on the outside of the community. All right? It sounds pretty straightforward, doesn't it? There are some problems. Treat him as you would treat a Gentile or a tax collector. Matthew, author of Gospel, Matthew, tax collector. Treat him as you would treat a Gentile or a tax collector. Matthew is writing to his churches, which include not only Jewish Christians, but Gentile Christians. Treat him as you would treat a Gentile or a tax collector. Something is going on here that maybe this made sense in those very original Christian communities that were primarily Jewish Christian, and tax collectors and Gentiles would be seen on the outside. But as time goes on, those Christian communities have tax collectors and Gentiles in the community. So what could this phrase actually mean? Not so much in Jesus' original use of it, but as Matthew used it to talk to his communities. Here are some possibilities. It could be that what is being said is that these are people requiring evangelization. That rather than kicking them out, you've got to go back to square one and try one more time. And here's a much freer translation of that passage, a contemporary one. If he won't listen to the church, you'll have to start over again from scratch. Confront him with the need for repentance and offer again God's forgiving love. So it's a little confusing what that last step actually is if this person will not listen. And it gets a little more confusing. Then there's the line about binding and loosing, what you allow and what you forbid, and followed by the bit about prayer. One way of looking at this is that this is how you confirm those decisions that you've made about those troublesome people who are making it hard for you to love one another. That decision will hold in heaven, and that if you have prayed about it, it will be valid. Another problem. And I know it's Sunday, almost 6 o'clock, but if we got into an argument about the Greek translation, there's a fascinating thing that happens. One of the translations of that phrase goes like this. Whatever you shall bind on earth shall have already been bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall have already been loosed in heaven. The issue is not, given that translation, us figuring it out. The issue is figuring out God's will in this case of the troublesome person in the community. And interestingly, that ties nicely into that first reading. In that first reading, Ezekiel is told by the Lord, when you hear me say anything, you shall warn them for me. Them being the wicked, and if the wicked follows you, good. If he doesn't, well, then it's not really your problem. But he's telling Ezekiel, if you listen to me, you will find the decision that has already been bound in heaven or loosed in heaven, what you should forbid or what you should allow. And in fact, what did we sing as the responsorial song? If today you hear God's voice, harden not your heart. In making these kind of decisions, listen to the voice of the Lord, and you'll probably know you're going in the right direction if it doesn't harden your heart. What this seems to be all about is discernment and decision making. And it's not simply cutting the person out of the community, but the process by which you get to a point where you may have to start over again and try to love the neighbor. All right, so much for that kind of gospel analysis. What does that have to do with what we are about here right now today? A lot of our focus this past week has been on the northern part of the Caribbean this past week as Irma churns through it, and also Jose and Katya, as they make a mess of the northern Caribbean and affect the lives of millions and millions of people. But something was going on also in the southern part of the Caribbean. in the southern part of the Caribbean, in Colombia. Pope Francis has been visiting Colombia for about the last 5 days. His visit to Colombia is very important to Colombia and to the church because it marks the beginning of kind of the beginning of the implementation of the peace process that has brought to a halt, at least temporarily, the civil war in Colombia that has gone on for 50 years. Over 220,000 people have died in this civil war. Over 5 million people have been displaced in Colombia. And through a long process of negotiation with all the various parties involved in this conflict, finally last November, an accord was reached. And the motto for Francis's trip there is, "Let us begin." Let us begin. What are they beginning in Colombia? They are beginning that very process that we heard about in the gospel, right? That process of how you deal with a neighbor who is hard to love, of what are the steps you go through. And it is not easy. It's not easy for Colombia. There are great, as you can imagine, great resentments and hatreds that have built up over the years. But what's fascinating is it's not just a political conversation. It is a religious conversation, and it is about what has already been decided in heaven. What is the will of God in all of this? How do we make sense of that? If you have a chance, take a look at some of what Francis has said in Colombia, because it might apply here too. The last thing he's doing there on his trip is today he's in the city of Cartagena, celebrating Mass at the church of St. Peter Claver, whose feast day was yesterday. Peter Claver was a Jesuit who worked among the enslaved people being brought to Cartagena. Over 10,000 enslaved people a year were brought to Cartagena, and he worked with them. And it's a time to think about Peter Claver, about the process of reconciliation, and about the original sin of the United States, which is racism and slavery that's a product of it. If Colombia can begin to deal with 50 years of civil war, maybe by listening to those steps that we heard in the gospel tonight, we can begin to deal with that issue of racism in our country. It will not be simple. It will probably take a long time. It's a conversation that we must have. Because you have to love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Sounds simple, right? The simplest things are the hardest ones.